much. Thank you. Okay, Thai, you ready?
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So my name is Thai. Excuse me, my accent is a bit of flu. This is my topic today, Burma cross-border civil society and Burma's democracy struggle. And Burma, as you probably heard of it, is still stuck in a political crisis. I myself came out of Burma as a result of political crisis in Burma. So we're talking about civil society in a third world situation, and whereas the civil society is still being suppressed and democratic culture hasn't really flourished. And I'm a postgraduate student with the Adult Education, but you might want to know how it's got to do with civil society, and that's what I intend to explain. And civil society in Burma is not a very strong situation, but in the last decade, there's a new type of civil society has emerged. That's from my fieldwork. A term that is cross-border civil society. My investigation is between Thai-Burma borders. I think I'd probably would be good to briefly look at what is the situation in Burma, if you're not familiar with Burma. Burma sort of military took over in 1962, and since then a series of military leaders and dictators around the country. There's no reliable census in Burma, but about 50 million people believed to be living in Burma. And has been regarded as the least developed country by the United Nations recently. The ruling ideology since the military came into Burma is insular, nationalist, and state socialism. Burma still have, with half a million armed force, now is the second largest army in South Asia, I think second to probably Indonesia. The reasons, there's an ongoing civil war, it's nearly half a century, but doesn't really attract international attention because it's a very low-key civil war. The recent figures show there's about nearly half a million internally displaced population in the country. Hundreds of thousands of refugees remain in the neighboring country, India, Bangladesh, and in Thailand. In Thailand alone, about 150,000 registered refugees on the Thai-Burma border. And Thailand also hosts about 2 million Burmese migrant workers in Thailand. Amid those, the current regimes show no sign of giving up the power, even to actually implementing the pronounced democratic transformation. And the democratic movement, the opposition movements, are active inside and outside of the country. So this is sort of the rough picture of what is in Burma. And looking at how the civil society fit in the scope of my study, the thesis title is Popular Education, Cross-Border Civil Society, and the Possibility for Democracy and Reconciliation in Burma. So I examine education theories and practice that promotes and build democracy, democratic culture, and I conceptualize civil society as a site of struggle where these freedoms of movement and emancipation flows. That's how the civil society come into my study. Again, why I choose to study civil society, because I look at it is where the resistance to the regime is happening, where the grassroots democratization and social mobilization take place, and the idea of bottom-up democratic transformation. In the case of Burma, it's very weak, even within the opposition movements. The Burma expert, especially David Stamos from Georgetown University in the United States, said civil society as an abstract or intellectual concept does not exist in Burma. his absence may have indicated the centrality and powerful nature of the Burmese state through history. Ashley South, another Burma observer, said, Burmese democratic movement focused too much on the elite level. That means it's not enough focused on the people and social movements. So it's only tentative period and much of civil society network inside Burma, and especially on the border area, Thai Burma border area. So in this context, I define civil society as having the capacity to act or to advocate independent of the state. And I argue this civil society is probably the place where the seeds of transformation for time that take place. Also briefly look at civil society in the context of Burma. Again, some Burma's experts pronoun, such as Burma, David Steinman's pronoun, civil society in Burma is dead. There's no civil society. But I argue, if I look at it closely, it's about, we can see about six types of civil society are still alive and far from dead. We look at these six types, and type 1, 2, 3, and 4 are inside Burma. So they work within the legal bound of the state law and regulation. They responding to the humanitarian and immediate need. But their agenda is not to really to tackle or to attempt to overthrow the military regime. But type 5 and 6, they work outside of the control of the regime, and they seek to promote democracy and elimination of the military culture. So ultimately, they seek to change the society. And I'll go into a bit more detail about these six types of just briefly looking at these six types of civil society. Type 1 civil society, as I said, would operate inside Burma. What I call them is a fake and compliant civil society. What it is like is, if you probably comparable to Indonesia's model, the regime has created some civil organizations. One of them is called the Union Solidarity and Development Association. They claim to have about more than 10 million members around the country. It's sponsored by the military. The government servants and officials are required, in many cases, forced to join this organization. But they do serve the agenda of military regime. Sometimes they will be coming out of the street to demonstrate mass rally to support the regime's political agenda. The good example last year when the United Nations sent special rapporteur to Burma, all these USDA members are required to come out of the street and just to say that they support the regime's political agenda. So that can be, this is one type of civil society. They are they're not part of the military, but they also invest in many enterprise and business activities. Type 2 civil societies are those struggling for emancipation, and I refer them to the opposition group, the political party they register for, including the National League for Democracy that led by Aung San Suu Kyi, and there's many ethnic political parties and the student union. But these organizations are very weak in terms of their ability to be able to do their work, or even to they've been subspreaded to the point where they are almost unable to create any social movement. Type 3 is the traditional social, religious, and cultural organization. Burma, in general, is still a very traditional society. I think that type of civil society actually survived under the state socialism during the last 30 years, because they don't seem to threat the regime and politically. So they've been allowed to operate. This is some literacy program in the name of preserving culture and identity. But these programs are closely watched by the military intelligence, so they also limited in their ability to actually do something that's outside of what the regimes allow them to do. And Thai Force, I call them the international NGOs that operate in Burma. This is for Burma, for modern Burma, this is a new phenomenon. During the socialist regimes, any organization from outside cannot go inside. And last 10 years, we look at Burma is facing health and education crisis, especially HIV AIDS has started to stress. And that is the regime sort of have no choice, has to open to some international organization, such as like the United Nations, Red Cross, which is Save the Children Foundation, now operate inside Burma. And these organizations have to sign a momentum of understanding with the regimes. The idea is the regime can have control on things. If the regime believes that they are engaged in any political activity, their MOU can be withdrawn. So that's the way the military regimes control the organization in Burma. Type 5 of the term the cross-border civil society organization. And this is actually the focus of my presentation. These organizations engage in humanitarian assistance, capacity building, and social change. And this group assess alternative social and political vision. And I'll come to that a bit more. Just to finish with the six type. The type six is I refer to those civil society network of Burmese exile that's based in third country, such as the US, Austria, and Europe. That includes the Free Burma Coalition, Free Burma Campaign Austria, and Euro-Burma office in Belgium. So you can see in the context of Burma that at least about six types of civil society still remain. I just think that also it's useful to look at how the regime in Burma exercises power. So then one might question how come a civil society cannot thrive in Burma. So critical theories which suggest military regimes or military authority, the authoritarian regime will exercise top-down power. But I believe they also exercise bottom-up power. I draw on Foucault's idea how power operate, and I look at a traditional religious organization, how the opinions are formed and the regime manipulate. In general, the regime is very top-down and used brutal force. We crush any resistance or any organization that has opinion different to them. But if I also look at the regime's policies, such as divide and rule, to weaken the different ethnic groups or different religious and ethnic groups, that actually work. It creates a lot of misunderstanding and chaos between these different organizations. The regime would constantly manipulate religions and history in attempt to brainwash the population. It already provocates national security, make the population feel that Burma is under constant sort of attack of foreign power, usually referred to the United States. And it said unity can only be achieved through uniformity and chauvinism. So that way, if anyone that does not agree with the military regime can be labeled as a traitor or ex-handler. For example, Aung San Suu Kyi, for example, she is being labeled as an ex-handler, referred to being used by the foreign power, the Western power in that case. Now let's move to cross-border, and I think it's good to look at quickly look at the border region with Thailand, and why I choose to look at Thailand. As if you look at Thai-Burma border, it's the area where the most ethnic population and where the civil war runs. Thailand and Burma has a long social history and cultural economy tie, but mainly through unofficial border trade route. It's still got about 2 million migrant workers in Thailand. And the situation in Thailand. And I just quickly look at what is the factor behind the emergence of cross-border civil society. One of them is the lack of public spaces in Burma and independent actions. And the state failures to meet basic needs, especially in health and education in the area. A ceasefire agreement, I know that I didn't have time to explain, that the regime initiated some ceasefire between the ethnic groups, armed groups in 1990s. But that actually allows some space for local self-help organization to emerge. And after 50 years civil war, the dominant ideology within the democratic movement, the opposition movement, are still very hierarchical and still very militant. And that leads to many people looking at alternative way of finding the democratic struggle. And despite ceasefire agreement in 1990, there's still 500,000 internally displaced population and 7,000 refugees in Thailand. And Burma's economy continue to decline, and Burma still largely rely on the importation of basic goods from neighboring country. So they fit the border area to be sort of an active zone for cross-border civil society. Look at the function of the cross-border civil society. It basically filling the gap in the health education area, where in the border area where the communities are deeply divided and underdeveloped and the plague of poverty. Running out of just go quickly, there's a kind of frame I'd like to look at. If you look across the border, cross-border civil society and existing civil society theories, civil society is viewed as an institution between the state and the social world and acts on in favor of a life world to preserve and open and source public sphere. And the Kramsky notion of a civil society, the war position is a movement of counter-hegemony to resist state power. That means civil society institutions usually operate within a national boundary. The concept of civil society in democratic opposition movement in communist Central Eastern Europe is to create protective sphere for public sphere from the official sphere of the state party. But if you look at cross-border civil society, it's about creating public sphere in an authoritarian state. The key character of civil society operate across the border, the two nations, and in the area where the state fails. The driving force behind the cross-border civil society is usually a lot of them are young people who reject the dominant ideologies within the leader of democratic movements. So like I said, civil society is operating in a life war, it's not necessarily bound by the state world. Life war exists with people within a society, and when the people move across the national boundary, life war also extends across the border. Cross-border civil society, in the case of Burma, demonstrate that independent and vibrant civil society has the ability to operate outside of the state control to social war. I'll stop here and see if you have any questions.
Thank you very much. Okay, so any questions from anybody?
Yeah, I was interested in how you described the border region of the a nursery for the seeds of civil society to grow. And I'm wondering what methods people are using to communicate, what's happening in those sort of nursery beds, how are they, those ideas and strategies being communicated back into their hinterland? How are people getting, circulating the ideas?
I can see what you mean. I ask myself many times, but the communication is happening, but it's not is in a black and white or clear cut. But if, when we see some sort of anti-government activities, a major one that happened in the last few years, we can see that the board of our Thailand-based civil society organization and inside movement are very much connected. But because of the security and the regime would tolerate anything that would that believes against them. So they keep the communication is very very secretive. And for example, in Burma, having a mobile phone without permission or having a fax machine without permission can be punished. So the opposition movement inside the country have to be very careful in the way they have communication with the organization outside of Burma, especially on the Thai-Burma border. And the regime know very well that what happened on the border is not just happening there, it's an attempt to create some social movement inside the country. But what I can see, the latest technology such as like what we call DBV, Democratic Voice of Burma, based in Norway, and they have TVs and radio program that not just a pure anti-regime agenda. They will use a lot of very, for example, what happened in South Africa in many stories that would inform Burmese to rebuke their own situation. So that way, at least bypass the regime control information technology. But still very hard in Burma though, because having television and to receive information is still illegal. And you can be punished by watching these opposition's media.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I have a question about, you mentioned there that within this cross-border civil society there is a transfer of leadership some extent from the more hierarchic political structures to looser kind of self-help humanitarian organizations. What are the implications of that politically?
What I see, this is in the Burma's context, now we see it is true, the Burmese opposition movement in the older generation are much believe that they believe in zero sum to overthrow the regime, but that in reality doesn't work. The civil war dragged on for 50 years, there's nowhere close to the end of this. The new generation, I see many more younger generation have formed organization, but I would say they reject the old ideology. There's more flat organization, there's no leader. And their movement is not just about anti-regime, they move into more human rights defending, environmental organization, natural conservation. So it's much more diverse and their agenda is much broader. So that way they can also form alliance with organization in other countries because there's a shared goals and agenda. So it's not just like older generation, much more organization structure. Everything has to be anti-government. It's not like that. The younger generation has much better the way they form others. There's much more women movements, a lot stronger than ever. And they have a national network of environmental organization, railway network organization. These were unheard of back about 20, 25 years ago. But now, I would say these diverse and more complex agenda are happening. But these, you see more on the Thai-Burma borders.
Yeah, I was thinking one of the interesting things is the dialectic that you have between order and disorder in Burma. Like, you have an authoritarian state that creates disorder in a way to present itself as the, you know, creates the misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And I've read sort of some cases during the last big riots, withdrew all its presence from the streets and actually encouraged criminal activity to, so that it created massive disorder, so people had to turn to it. And at the same time, you get the democratic movement being hierarchical and therefore excluding people from participating in it. And now you get this whole sort of liminal people on the border, you know, transferring from one place to another, shifting around. And I mean, it's not really a question, but I just find it fascinating the way that
it's all
playing out here. Do you think there's a way, in fact, in which, in some ways, the Burmese military is creating its opposition by, in fact, disordering in order to keep itself in power?
In a sense, it's true. I would say that the military regime, I guess the opposition side has not really invest a lot in studying the ideology of the military regime, mm-hmm. instead of saying that they're the one causing the thing. But if you look at the military, has a quite complex ideology, the way they run. I'm advocating they're good, but they do know their business very well, how to maintain the population quiet, how to control it. And there's a lot of faction within their own organization. There's several layers. There's not just within the democratic movement, generation change are taking, but even within the military structure. The younger officers are questioning, but within very limited thing, and the top leaders of the regimes make sure that the hierarchy work well. And it's you're right, they use conflict for their advantage as well. Sorry, did you?
Yeah, I just want to ask a question about if the student movement activities in universities going on, do the generation of students who left as refugees in the early 90s and moved in Australia and other places, do they more have contact with that new generation of students, or are they more engaged in working with what's going on the southern border? What's the relationship to the diaspora?
Some have relationship through personal or maybe family contact, but what I understand, Burma, since the British colonial rule, any movement has always been initiated and led by students. Even the father of Aung San Suu Kyi, he started his anti-colonial when he was a student. The student has a long history and active role in Burma. But what funny thing is, the different generation don't tend to have very cooperative way of operating. Mm-hmm. So In 1974, we have a student group that led against the military dictator. That they were kicked out of the country, they were brutally repressed, and they sort of disappeared. And in 1988, there's a massive wave of new student movement appeared, and they were very successful in the very early. They toppled the government, but they couldn't maintain the momentum, and they sort of lost their direction halfway. But you look at 88 and 1974, the connection is very weak. Even the generation of 1974 have much more experience. And when you look back in 1999, there's another wave of student movement. They have connection with the 1988, but not in the sense that were coordinated well. And we look at in 2007, that again, that's different. Among that organization, they all come out of these different generations, but not because of well coordinated. Mm-hmm. I think my observation is sometimes the movement, the social movement inside, emerge for different factors. And when did that happen, the people inside, the older generation, they started to join them or help them. That's a way that happened. Yeah.
Okay. James and I think we should have 10 minutes at least to go and get some